chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Our neighbor Jack Asarta is known throughout the world for his Aerotropolis concept. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about that. But essentially, it puts airports in position to be the 21st century drivers of business. The centerpiece, I guess is the right word, of new cities that will be built up around them rather than being kind of haphazardly next door to the big cities where they are crowded out by the growth of the big cities. His new book, or he's the co-author or the co-participant in the development of a brand new book, Aerotropolis, The Way We'll Live Next, has gotten incredibly thoughtful reviews and commentary throughout the world. And I'm very curious, Jack Casarda, about what Aerotropolis, your word, means and why it's important for those of us who live anywhere in the world to understand.
Thank you, DG. It's a pleasure to be with you having this conversation today. An aerotropolis is basically a city that's built around an airport, where the airport is the center based on the connectivity that it provides all types of businesses. Nationally and globally, to their suppliers, to their enterprise partners, and to their markets. So if you're in an aerotropolis, which is basically the cities being built around airports, think of the Raleigh-Durham Airport and the type of development that's taking place around that. Oftentimes, business associates, suppliers, let's say of microelectronics or pharmaceutical products, or markets for the products that originate in Research Triangle Park, maybe 100 miles, 500 miles, 5,000 miles away. And often the distant suppliers and partners and markets are more important to those businesses near the airport than the business down the street.
So we think of the airport as moving people around, and that's important. But you're making the point that the manufacturers of, say, pharmaceuticals may be assembling products, but they have a worldwide plan to bring the most economical or the best manufactured goods, products that are a part of the new product, and they come in by freight into Raleigh-Durham Airport.
That's correct. The parts and components will, those industries such as microelectronics, pharmaceuticals, medical instruments, sometimes digitized auto parts or that need for replacement, or even fresh fish and fresh cut flowers. They will come in from quite distant markets by air. The airplanes are the highways in the sky. They are the physical internet that connects this region.
You know, air freight's expensive, and why don't the pharmaceuticals plan a little bit in manufacturers and the other manufacturers plan a little bit in advance? And cost would be a big factor competitively, and it would be less expensive to move them, you know, not by this high-cost air freight.
Well, that's true. Air freight is costly, but so is time. And many of these products, such as pharmaceuticals, are perishable, where even hours can make a difference, not days or weeks. And so it is just more cost-efficient to be producing at a distant site and ship them in by air. It covers more than covers the cost of transportation. And many of these products, as I mentioned, are time-critical, time-sensitive, where time is a real cost, as well as the traditional way in which we view cost. So aviation is used to move these products. Today, about a third of the U.S. exports and imports move by air.
We're talking with Jack Casarda about a new book. He's the co-author. It's called Aerotropolis, and we're exploring really the meaning of that word. And so my question is you've used Raleigh-Durham Airport as RDU as an example. Is it and the growth that takes place around it? Is it a real Aerotropolis, or is it just something to talk about?
No, I think it's an emerging Aerotropolis. It may not have the full form as described in China or India, where airports and their surrounding businesses are built on blank sheets. We call them greenfield sites, so you can see the form. But the Raleigh-Durham area without the airport, the number of firms that have located in the Research Triangle Park have pointed to that air connectivity is critical. Even in the financial services industry, some of the financial firms that have moved down from the Boston area, they're able to keep their headquarters in Boston and have their middle level and researchers commute back and forth on the air links between Raleigh-Durham and Boston. And that enables them to have some quite significant presence, not only at the Research Triangle Park area, but in the surrounding cities. So the Aerotropolis has two forms. It has a functional form, which is made up of the airlines, the airport, and the region that the airport serves. And you don't see physical form, but all the businesses in the Raleigh-Durham area that couldn't exist here without the airport is very, very important. That could be 10 miles, 15, 20, 25 miles distant from the airport. But the airport is very important for their connectivity of their business people and the products. And then you have the physical or spatial elements. So it's the type of growth that you see. And if one were to measure development in the Raleigh-Durham area and look at employment growth or firm location investment, you would see a great deal of concentration in the 3 to 5 mile zone around Raleigh-Durham Airport, one of the largest nodes of employment growth and investment in the region.
Well, one of the things that sets Raleigh-Durham apart from some of the other airports that you deal with in your book, Raleigh-Durham Airport is not a big hub. And so that everything is an exaggeration, but most of the things that come into Raleigh-Durham or that leave there must be transported, stop along the way, move to another airplane, so that the concept of speed, which you emphasize in your book and your thinking, is there's a hitch. I guess you just say it's not frictionless because there's a piece of friction that handicaps Raleigh-Durham. I'm trying to lead off of your thinking. Mm-hmm. Is our Aerotropolis a handicapped Aerotropolis?
I wouldn't go so far to say it's handicapped. Of course, we were once a hub for American Airlines, which provided business people with the type of nonstop connectivity to most parts of the country that we don't have now. We have mostly one-stop connectivity, as you mentioned, through the major hubs, whether it's Atlanta or DFW or Chicago.
Excuse me for interrupting you, because I want to talk about all of our big airports here, and one of them is Charlotte. And Charlotte, it seems that when I want to go someplace, a lot of times I fly from Raleigh-Durham to Charlotte, mm-hmm. get off and change planes almost as much time. I can almost drive to the Charlotte airport by the time I do all that. But so does Charlotte have a competitive advantage over
Yes,
Raleigh?
Yes, it does. It does have a competitive advantage because it has a much better national network and global network than Raleigh-Durham has. Of course, we have the nonstop flight to Heathrow, which is one of the global hubs of the world. So flying to Heathrow puts us one stop away from most places in the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, which makes me, I tell you what, let's take a break. I'm visiting with Jack Casarda, and a wonderful explanation of how our Raleigh-Durham Airport fits into the concept of an Aerotropolis. And I want to move now, since you mentioned, I want to move to Heathrow, and maybe you can teach us a little bit about airports by talking about Heathrow, the airport. We'll do that after a short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is our neighbor, Jack Casarda, who is the director and Keenan Distinguished Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship, the Frank Hawkins Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise, Keenan Flagler Business School at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And that is just a start on all the things that Jack Casarda has done.
I know it's a mouthful, DG, but you have it right.
But we're talking today about Aerotropolis, which is a brand new book. And Jack is the co-author and is the subject of the, it's almost a biography of you, Jack, but essentially it is a development so that those of us who don't who haven't understood the concepts that you've been talking about all over the world can better understand what's going on. We talked about our airport, Raleigh-Durham. It might be well, even though nobody ever thought that the that our little airport in Chapel Hill was a part of an aerotropolis, but it did have a connective. It's like some of the larger airports in the sense that some of Chapel Hill developed around this airport, and as it developed, the development occurred around the airport. People wanted to get rid of the airport because the planes flying over it annoyed the people who lived close by.
Yes, that's true, and that all too frequently happens.
Did that happen at Heathrow?
Well, it's a long story.
Give us a brief, briefly talk about
Heathrow, and the airport at one time did have quite a bit of land around it, and it filled in. And there's a there's an old saying that the airport leaves the city, the city follows the airport becomes a city, and that certainly happened around Heathrow, where we find the highest valued industrial property in the world, but it's also in the West End of London, where you have a lot of business executives that rely on Heathrow, and that anchors those higher-end residential areas. But Heathrow is an airport that's rot with problems.
In an earlier segment, you mentioned that one of the advantages of living at Raleigh-Durham is that we got a direct flight to Heathrow, and you can get off in Heathrow and go anywhere in the world. It's one of the busiest, in some respects, the best airport in the world. But you read your book, and it's just the success has led to so many problems that it just hardly knows what to do. What happened?
Well, it grew, and it grew such that both the ground issues, that is the movement of people between the terminals, the five terminals that exist, and the air capacity with only two runways became terribly congested. And I do quite a bit of traveling, and when people tell me to be at the airport 2 hours ahead of the flight, I say, okay, thank you, and I never get there 2 hours before. An hour is always sufficient time, but not at Heathrow. You better get there 2 hours ahead.
Oh, well.
And if you're changing planes, you better arrive a good hour and a half to 2 hours before your next flight, because the movement among those five terminals is very tedious and very difficult, and really takes a good deal of time. They are not efficiently connected. There is no SkyTrain that you see at many of the largest airports in the world that connect the terminals, so you need to wait for a bus. The security is extremely tight because of the huge diversity of travelers that go through Heathrow. For 60 million passenger annual airport, they do it with just two runways. So the runways and taxiways are congested. They have room for a third runway, but politically it has become very, very difficult. So that has become a political football, particularly with environmentalists and others.
Well, that's enough. I mean, what's the lesson learned from Heathrow for the future?
Well, the fact of the matter is Heathrow was the driver of much of the development in the financial services sector. London is a global city, and these financial service executives need to be well connected. And what is happening is many of these people are moving out to other European and non-European airport areas to stay connected, given the problems that exist at Heathrow in terms of the connectivity. The efforts to add the third runway have been stymied on the grounds of community resistance to noise that you mentioned before, the environmental factors such as carbon footprint and greenhouse gases has become politically a very volatile issue in Great Britain. And with the Conservative government coming in recently, they have decided they will not support the third runway, which means that Heathrow is going to be challenged to its global
it's
status
like
as
the,
a hub.
Yogi Berra thing. It's so crowded, nobody goes there anymore.
Exactly.
And is it your idea that if you start fresh and build an airport that is designed not to encounter these difficulties of success that you can steal is not the right word, but that you can divert, maybe replace London or the London Heathrow connection. You can build a new connection that might shift, say, the financial business or the other businesses that Heathrow serves in London to another location.
Well, a very good example, and we see some of the shift occurring to Amsterdam, which doesn't have quite the congestion that that Heathrow has. But the importance of the airport to businesses in these global cities should not be or cannot be overstated. And a very good example is a bank that many people are – it's a global bank called ABN AMRO, which is a Dutch bank but with global reach. They found it very, very difficult to build a new corporate headquarters in the city of Amsterdam because it's a museumized city and large glass towers don't fit well with the style and the desire to keep the central part of Amsterdam a historic site. So the Dutch, who are very good, they're inveterate planners, wanted to see ABN AMRO move to the area towards the port, which was a declining area, to serve as an anchor for urban revitalization in that area. But the executives won connections to the airport. And they did eventually locate 6 minutes from Amsterdam's terminal in an area called Amsterdam Zuidas, which is part of Amsterdam City, connected by rail and by highway to the airport. But the argument got down to ABN AMRO executives telling the Dutch government, if we can't be located near the airport, because our executives need that connectivity so much to the regional markets that they serve, we're going to leave the Netherlands. And so the Dutch government said, okay, locate
where
in
would
Zuidas.
They, well, if that was, if, was that an empty threat? Because where could they go? Where would be – if Amsterdam had, like London is now saying, okay, move, where could they go?
Well, it could be Munich.
Munich's got an airport that's better.
Very good airport. Well,
doesn't have the finance center like Frankfurt.
No,
does,
but they would. They would. Frankfurt could be another possibility, but Frankfurt Airport is constrained for the same reasons. The green movement is very, very powerful in the Frankfurt area, and there's all types of negotiations that had to go on with the expansion of Frankfurt Airport, which is absolutely critical because when you think about Frankfurt, you know, it certainly isn't a tourist center. It was leveled pretty much during World War II. It's a financial center as right. well. And without that airport connectivity, which is very good, incidentally, because what the Europeans have done well that the Americans have lagged behind is they've also emphasized rail transit and the connectivity of the airport to the downtown in a fast and efficient way. So you can get from Frankfurt Airport to the financial district in 15 minutes by just going down an escalator in the airport and getting on the S-Bahn or one of the other trains that goes directly to the downtown. And what Frankfurt has done, and this might have been one of the attractions, they've built over their inner city rail tracks, which is that goes to the cities throughout Germany, and it's not local trains. That's why it's called intercity in Europe. A 1.5 million square foot office complex called Air Rail Center that has the regional corporate headquarters of many firms, such as the European headquarters for KPMG, is located there, but also has hotels and business services. And in that, this is a 6 minute walk from the gate, the international gates of Frankfurt Airport. And so you have the rail connectivity underneath it, the air connectivity, and this has been a magnet. So it's locations like this that could be competitive.
Is Frankfurt the place you would go to try for people who've experienced these different airports to say this is closer to what we're talking about in terms of an Arab?
It is. It's a good example. Populous. Certainly immediately around the airport, you see also just a few minutes walk from Terminal 2 is 1,100-room Sheraton Hotel and Conference Center that people will fly in, have their meetings there, and fly out without even an overnight stay. If there is a need for an overnight stay, there's 1,100 rooms that are basically connected to the Frankfurt Air Terminal.
The recent discussion of the merger of the stock exchanges and the relocation to Frankfurt got my attention and made me wonder Does New York suffer a competitive disadvantage with Frankfurt because of the way its airports are handled?
It does. Our New York City airports are not airports that we can be proud of, either in appearance or in function. They're, of course, older airports. It's very difficult to get from JFK to the lower Manhattan, where the financial service sector is concentrated. It is not the airport and airport area provide the first and last impression of a city and a region, and that first and last impression is not nearly as good as people who've traveled through the European or Asian airports receive, and the overall connectivity is not very good.
You're called upon by communities all over the world to advise them about what is, you know, not what is necessarily the best, but what's possible given their geographic and political situation. And is there hope for New York, or is or over time?
I think New York recognizes the problems. Of course, its airports are run by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which has multiple responsibilities. It's not just the airport, but it's even bus terminals and rail lines and ports. And so they're really not specialized. And it's a political entity. It's not run as an enlightened business, as is the case in Europe and in much of Asia. So fly into let's say LaGuardia, which is relatively well located with respect to Manhattan, and take a look at the seats that are there. They're torn. They're dirty. The concourses are not attractive.
And this is just mostly I don't want to call it local, but it's North American traffic at LaGuardia. If you want to go really overseas, you got to go to
that's
one
correct.
Of the other.
LaGuardia is a domestic airport, and you need to go to Newark or to
and you can't
JFK.
Get there.
Try to go from Newark Airport to LaGuardia and go across town. Even going from JFK to LaGuardia, both out on Long Island, can be it can take time and can be difficult. So the connectivity isn't what it could be. It's very, very interesting because after 9/11, I received a phone call from the Lower Manhattan Development Committee on ways that this emerging concept could be applied to help revitalize and lead to new growth of Lower Manhattan. Of course, that's where the World Trade Center was, which is interesting with our conversation today. We're doing it the day that Bin Laden.
We don't want to date it because we might. But,
we don't want. But anyway,
recently we lost our friend Bin Laden.
What I recommended was the best thing you could do to revitalize Lower Manhattan in the light of the disaster that took place was to develop high-speed rail service from JFK to Manhattan. So executives from around the world could fly into JFK and be in the downtown offices
in 20 minutes. Would that pretty much solve the problem?
I won't say it will solve the problem. It would go a long way to addressing the problem.
And so you've wrestled with this. It just seems stupid from the standpoint of somebody who doesn't understand the politics and all of the business and commercial aspects, given this threat that you describe, that business people are going to go where it's convenient and where they can speedily access routes to get to their competitors and customers all over the world, that this does not happen.
Well, there's a lack of recognition by many people of the fact that the Aerotropolis and the airports that center them are manifestations of 21st century globalization, and that to remain globally competitive, you need to be connected and well connected.
Well, I was kind of nudging you to say democracy is a problem when it comes to airport management. And you've become sort of a fan of autocratic government.
Well, let's say that I won't say a fan of autocratic governments, but it's easier to do this where there's a top-down decision-making hierarchy and you don't have to go through all the community reviews and environmental impact statements. And by fiat, the autocrat would say, it shall be, and work commences. Of course, there are real downsides to that.
Let's take a break and talk about some of the things that are going on in a part of the world where you're more likely to get a top 10 driven decision that would be maybe in the long run better interest of the country. We're visiting with Jack Casarda. We're talking about his new book, Aerotropolis, The Way We'll Live Next, and he and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Jack Casarda. He's our neighbor, and he's the author and the subject of a new book called Aerotropolis, The Way We'll Live Next. That book has gotten incredibly strong reviews in the major publications throughout the world. It's an important book. And Jack, thanks for kind of talking to us in simple terms to help us understand how we're surrounded by these challenges of airports, both the downsides and the wonderful opportunities. One of the things before the break we mentioned was that it's hard for New York to address the opportunities that its current airports present by working modern improvements and accessibility, but you consult in Thailand, in China, in Korea, in India, and in virtually every other emerging economy. Leaving out the Middle East, but China is probably this is an interesting situation, as you might encounter anywhere, because this exploding economy and a developing understanding of the concepts that you talk about in the importance of speedy connective links in the delivery of products and to a certain lesser degree, maybe in China, the movement of people back and forth. What's happening in China, and how are you a part of it, and what do you tell those people over there they should be doing?
Well, certainly China is the factory of the world, and it surprisingly just doesn't produce products that move by ocean, but a large number of our advanced electronics, the iPhones, the iPads, they are manufactured or assembled in China and flown in the bellies of 747 aircraft or in what are all cargo aircraft to LAX, Los Angeles International, and distributed across the country. And the growth of manufacturing in China is increasingly higher value, and it's of higher value. Smaller, lighter, more compact products that are amenable to moving by air. And what's interesting is not only is quite a bit of this done in southern coastal China, known as the Pearl River Delta, but much of this, as a result of the urging of Chinese government officials, is moving inland into the provinces of the West, cities that many people might not have heard of that are 5, 8, 10, 15 million people, like Chongqing and Chengdu and Kunming. These are developing as major.
I had to get a map out reading your book to see where these Chinese towns are located.
There's a go west, and I'm always amazed that I discover a city of 2 or 5 million that I had never heard of. Right. I consider myself having an urban background, but that's what you find in places of 1.3 billion people. China is recognizing that it has to move products and people, and I'll come to that in a moment, far more efficiently. Given the fact that speed and agility and connectivity are 21st century competitive factors, so they see their airports in this global connection, because anyone, you know, that as I said, that uses an iPhone or an iPad, that was assembled in China, and they
But Jack, why not just ship it? You know, why is it necessary to put it in an airplane and move it at the great cost of the environment and great cost in fuel and all of this? Why not just put it on a boat the way that the Chinese have always shipped to us?
Well, because in the new economy, these time-critical items are costly to be out in the ocean for a month and to be held in inventory in warehouses. So much of the shipping that is done of the product occurs after the order has taken place.
There's a value in dollars to the amount of time that's saved And that's a high amount of – that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And time is one of our most valuable factors when it comes to adding revenue sources to companies that utilize and or that sell these products. So it's a matter of supply chains being critical drivers of the global economy where parts and components might be manufactured in six or seven different countries, assembled in an eighth, say China, and then distributed to a ninth, the United States. So this is the way our global economy operates.
How are the Chinese responding to the challenge of providing speedy air transport from their factories to the markets here in the United States and Europe?
They're responding with tremendous investment in airport infrastructure. About a quarter of $1 trillion will be spent, U.S. dollars will be spent over the next 5 years. I think it's $250 billion just on building new airports and modernizing
Now, are you telling them how to build these airports? What do you tell them that they should do in building the new airports? What are the lessons that you've learned over your career that the Chinese are going to benefit from?
And these are general models and they're principles that are on the Aerotropolis website that if any of your listeners are interested in looking
we'll
at.
We'll have a link to that.
Yeah, the link www.aerotropolis.com. Very simple. But it basically talks about how you can design the airport to be more innovative, more flexible, more rapidly responsive to the movements of products in and out, the parts and components and the physical goods, and how you can make that airport as fast and agile a location for businesses to locate around, and what is needed in terms of the surface transportation connectivity, what is needed in terms of the telecommunications infrastructure to trace and track and control these product movements, what's needed in terms of the commercial support, the free trade zones, we call them foreign trade zones here, and express customs clearance, going internationally, the customs clearance.
All of these things designed to make it easier to connect and do business.
Right, to make them more connected, faster, more agile, more responsive. And it's much easier for the Chinese to do this for two reasons. One is many of these airports are not in the middle of their cities. They are oftentimes in the periphery where very little existed 15 or 20 years ago. They don't go through all the environmental reviews that we would go through. They don't consider community responses nearly to the extent that we do here in the United States or in Western Europe. If they need to move a village, they will move a village, arguing that sometimes democracy sacrifices efficiency. So, but they fundamentally view their airports and surrounding areas as weapons in global trade, and they look at them as the primary asset for them to compete. And as I mentioned before, oftentimes our views of airports are quite different. We don't view them as competitive tools. We view them more as nuisances and environmental right. threats to be controlled.
Well, let me before we need to take a break. But before we take a break, let me get over a couple of things that that are on the table. And the first is oil, and these air cargo planes depend upon the availability and the reasonable cost of petroleum, and that's gone. I mean, that's gone. So how can you make a plan for a world that is served by these airports when the fuel that is going to be driving them is both environmentally suspect and also economically suspect? How do you answer that? How do you answer that concern?
Well, you have to answer the answer that concern by we need to address the peak oil issue. Costs need to be addressed, but fuel consumption is not just in the air. The bulk of it is on the surface, and even when we produce various sorts of hybrid vehicles, somebody has to produce the electricity, which ultimately is.
We don't have any plug-in jets. pets yet either.
Well, we're moving towards that, and I do think we'll have plug-ins for the ground transportation for automobiles in the not too distant future. But we also know that there are tremendous innovations being made in aviation to address that issue. New aerodynamic design, such as the Boeing 787, all composite aircraft that make them much lighter. The substitution of biofuels that is moving forward quite rapidly. New air traffic control systems that replace radar with global positioning
systems.
So just
to use less and less and less of the petroleum and more of – but never –
Well, we don't know. You know, if you move to biofuels or some alternative to fossil fuels, then there will be less petroleum utilized and less jet fuel.
This topic is dealt with is comprehensively in your book, and I wish I would give you enough time to. But you've got a pretty reasonable answers to those questions. I want to take a break and come back, and then I'd like for you to just give us a quick survey of 4 airports in North Carolina that illustrate what's going on. And you'll have to do this in like 30 seconds each.
Okay.
But we're going to take a break. Then we'll come back and we'll talk about Charlotte, the Greensboro, Winston-Salem Airport, the Raleigh-Durham Airport again, and then the Global Trans Park Airport. Jack Casarda, and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I've been visiting with our neighbor, Jack Casarda, about his book, Aerotropolis, and about the concept of Aerotropolis and airports. And Jack, you just proved to us that there's not a question about airports that you haven't had to answer 100 times. But I really wanted to talk about the local airports. None of them really measure up as one of the gigantic Aerotropolises like the ones that you talk about in your book. But nevertheless, they're illustrative. And I wonder if you'd kind of go from west to east, about 4 airports. Charlotte, the Piedmont Triad Airport at Greensboro, Winston-Salem, the RDU Airport, and then the Global Trans Park, and where they fit into this pattern. And you're just going to have to do this real quick. I'll nudge you along.
Okay. Well, because we started, as you said, with Charlotte, which is the hub of U.S. Airways. And that hub connects Charlotte very fast and efficiently to markets around the country and around the world. It is absolutely instrumental to the financial services sector, but a growing number of high-tech firms, including the biotechnology industry that's developing in the Charlotte area.
It's stuck in the middle and surrounded by developing areas, though. It's got a problem, doesn't it?
Again, there's 2 elements of the Aerotropolis. There's the spatial element, and then there's the functional, which is the broader region that it serves that you don't see spatially, but those businesses are absolutely dependent upon the air connectivity that's provided to function.
What about Greensboro?
Greensboro actually is designated itself as an Aerotropolis, and they're trying to build on the success of which is known as GSO, Piedmont Triad International Airport, and they've had some success. They have developed quite a few aviation-linked functions, such as Honda Aero, which is producing the new very light jet. The research center, Global Research Center, manufacturing and headquarters is located there. They have a major, what's called MRO, manufacturing, repair, and overhaul, TIMCO, which is one of the largest in the world. And they have a number of other aerospace companies that are located right on the airport property. And, of course, Federal Express, FedEx, is developing.
So a mini Memphis?
Well, a mini Memphis, not quite yet, but it's even giants are born small. So
Greensboro has some potential that maybe some of us don't recognize.
I think Greensboro has a very good potential, not just because of the airport and the FedEx hub going there, but it has superb surface transportation connectivity, and that's why Federal Express FedEx set up its Atlantic hub.
Is this
hub
the
there.
Interstate highways that are?
It's the interstate
that?
Highways. There are 3 major interstate highways that intersect at and around the airport, and these, for example, we know that the battle for air cargo is won on the ground, not in the air. The airplanes all fly at the same speed. consume the same amount of fuel, and it's the surface connectivity to the manufacturing plants and to the markets that is critical. And Greensboro is right, and we're on the sweet spot of the East Coast in terms of surface connectivity.
Well, watch that. Now, we've talked a little bit about RDU earlier, but how do you see that as an aerotropolis?
RDU is developing an aerotropolis that includes the Research Triangle Park 10 minutes away or even closer of some components in Mooresville. Just look at the type of development that's taking there. It's not just the hotel complexes, but firms such as Lenovo that are located, you know, 5 minutes basically from the terminals. And we're going to see more and more planned development. And what's interesting is many people in this area are concerned about sprawl and the movement outward and the spread. What we're seeing with the aerotropolis is a reconcentration.
Around
the airport.
And so, does Raleigh-Durham have the potential to be a big-time aerotropolis, or is it just going to be a mini aerotropolis forever?
I think it has a potential to be a significant aerotropolis, and I think it it already is, but it's more of a functional type versus spatial, with the businesses spread throughout the greater Research Triangle region.
Talk to us about Global Trends Park. Mm-hmm. We're patiently waiting, mm-hmm. but probably a little bit of a disappointment to you in terms of the speed in which that is developing.
That's fair enough. I am disappointed. I was hoping it would move along much faster, and it really had a series of setbacks. A very long in the 1990s internal review for environmental impact statements that went out. Many miles from the airport. When it finally had its runway in place, 9/11 happened. It was finally given approval, and then the recession hit. And then there was a series of efforts to recruit major firms, the FedEx hub, for example.
I'm sorry to rush because we're just about out of time, but what it's got the airport, it's got lots of space. Yeah. So if your concept of an aerotropolis needing all of those things, I mean, it could still work, isn't it?
Well, and it's got something else. It's got Spirit AeroSystems, which is the leading producer of the fuselage and the wings for the A350, which is the 21st century all-composite aircraft that looks like it's going to be a highly successful aircraft, a competitor to the Dreamliner, the Boeing 787. We're starting to see the suppliers
come in. What does it need? What does it need to
Surface
catch.
Connectivity is very important. We talked about Greensboro.
And it doesn't have that quite yet.
Not quite yet. They're working on it, but it's going to have the connection to the port with the rail link, and that will be important in the long run, but the connections to the interstate highways are key to the success of the Global Trans Park.
We need some Chinese people to come build something there.
The Chinese are investing in North Carolina.
It looks like the Chinese understand the concept of aerotropolis better than some of our colleagues here, even though you, as the guru of the aerotropolis, live right among us. And we can't thank you enough for both the book that you and Greg Lindsay have put together, and then your willingness to come and visit with us about it. Thank you, Jack Sarter. Thanks to all y'all for listening. It's been Who's Talking, and we'll be right back here before you know it.